Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprint, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. This is your host, Don Nikoloff, and we'll be with you for the next hour. Got a great show lined up for you folks tonight. In fact, this is sing-along, play-along, call-in night. I have my regular guest here tonight, but we decided after a couple of opening comments in a short discussion that we are going to solicit your calls, and you'll find out why once we actually begin our topic. If you are on the BBSRadio.com website, then you already know that there are some numbers on the right side of the home page, and we would like you to call in on one of the BBS Station 1 lines. The toll-free number in the USA only is area code 877-876-5227. Toll-free in the USA and Canada is 888-815-9756. And the direct line, area code 530-876-3222. And we are going to ask you to call in. So if you plan on calling in, have your phone in hand and be ready. Tonight's topic is going to deal with the strange occurrences that people experience when they lose a loved one. But tonight we're not going to talk about members of our immediate or our birth families so much as we are about those children that we have, and those of us who love animals refer to our pets as our children because we come to know that they have a spiritual essence. They're not only intelligent, faithful, our guardians in many cases, whether it's a dog or a cat. Even people who own birds and fish will remark that these animals have a certain kind of consciousness. They recognize us, they see us, they react to things we do, and of course there are many, many other pets. Some people have pet pigs. The potbelly pig is a very intelligent animal, is at least as smart as a dog, and very responsive to human speech and human activities. Ferrets, hamsters, mice, all kinds of creatures will sort of vibe with the essence of a human being. If you love animals, they know it. And if you're afraid, they also know that. Yet when they pass on, what happens to them? Where do they go? And how do we handle their passing? And how do we handle some of the things that occur when they don't leave us, even after leaving the body? And that's going to be the subject we're going to talk about tonight. And again, we want to encourage you to call in and share some of your stories. Tonight's guest is a scientist extraordinaire. He is an inventor extraordinaire, very versed in power systems and other types of physics-related energy systems, as well as being a prolific author, lecturer, and teacher. My good friend and our regular Friday night guest, Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Thank you, Don. It's good to be back.
Well, we haven't seen each other in a week. Actually, it's been longer than that since we've seen each other, but we haven't spoken to each other in about a week, other than just to discuss a bit tonight's topic. And I know you had something that you wanted to share about a personal sort of paranormal experience in related to your family and how that's affecting everyone. And we don't usually talk about paranormal activities. So this is going to be an interesting topic for the both of us.
Well, actually, Don, I've had numerous unusual experiences down through the years. I don't make a lot of it because, generally speaking, it doesn't lead to anything except raised eyebrows. But the interesting thing is that there are now things coming to light which make a lot of these experiences worthy of discussion. And that brings up another interesting little comment that I want to make here. We really do encourage listeners to call in. There's no reason to be intimidated or concerned about what you have to say. There's no such thing as a silly question or an uninteresting question, and I would never belittle anyone, neither would Don. So if any of the things that we're going to talk about tonight strike home and listeners feel that they would like to contribute or even ask questions or make comments, and they can even be negative comments, heck, I got thick skin. Just dial in. We'll deal with it. Anyway, what I wanted to start off with, Don, was a book that I read back in the 60s that touched on a lot of interesting things, which I never really forgot. They've been swimming around in my cranial cavity for quite some time. And the reason I want to start off with that is because recent events in my life have stimulated memories and wonderments concerning these issues, and I thought it would be a good topic to muse on as a change in pace from some of the stuff we have been dealing with. The book that I was referring to is called Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain. And I know it had two female authors. One was named Lynn Schroeder, and to be honest with you, I don't remember the other gal's name anymore. But one of the things, there were many, many interesting topics, incidentally, covered in that book. But one of the things that were particularly interesting to me, having been raised around Russian and Ukrainian people, I always found them to be exceptionally sensitive and actually very spiritually inclined people, despite the fact that the governments were communist. And I had the interesting impression that a lot of genuine progress in the investigation of spiritual effects, or paranormal effects, if you choose that title, would actually be forthcoming from that part of the world, simply because of the fact that the governments were trying to prove that no such things exist. And oftentimes you get the opposite result when you start investigating stuff. But anyway, these gals went behind the Iron Curtain and dabbled into a variety of things. And three of the topics that I thought were particularly interesting, which concerned tonight's discussion, was, of course, spirit photographs, spirit recordings, and most incredible of all, a spirit filter. And it turns out that this spirit filter thing raised a lot of eyebrows back then, and unfortunately it just faded into limbo. But basically it was some kind of a phosphorescent screen that had been researched and produced in Russia someplace. And they had been doing a lot of experiments with people who were dying, and they were using their death as part of the investigation, and with their consent, I might add. And this filter was pretty unique because it would be backlit, apparently, and when the individual in question expired, you could literally see the spirit leave the body through this filter. And I thought that was pretty far out. Of course, the spirit photographs, they've been around for quite some time. That goes all the way back to the time of Crookes, who did a lot of investigating, not only in physics, but also in spiritual endeavors of different types. And more recently, we've got stuff like spirit recordings where you know, the voices of departed people are apparently picked up on electronic devices and recorded on tape. Now, it's no secret that near-death experiences have been going on for a very long time. A lot of times you'll hear stories about people who have been in car accidents, for instance, and they're very grievously injured, and you'll hear about how they claim that their life unfolded before their eyes, and they went into this tunnel and saw the bright light at the end of it and all these interesting things. And this particular happening, which seems to be quite universal, has become known in certain circles as the death reflex. And at this point, Don, I think it would be interesting if I was to interject that I know personally a man in the New York area. I will not say who it is for his sake, but I know a guy who was involved in some experiments to artificially induce the death reflex. And this was done in a very interesting and very scientifically controlled fashion, where the blood gases of dying people was first analyzed and recorded, and then the average response of the body slowly turning itself off in terms of the blood gases was then artificially produced, and people who were allowed to breathe the resulting gas mixtures actually had the death reflex occur. And they could see their entire life unfold before their eyes, and they weren't dying at all. So apparently there is a built-in mechanism that replays our life tape. I'm not sure what the purpose of that is. I guess it would depend to some extent on your religious beliefs as to how you would interpret that. But apparently it's there, and this is an exciting thing in itself, because if for no other reason, it might be very useful tool in psychoanalysis, where people can't remember early events or things that were traumatic in their life, et cetera, et cetera. This method might, in fact, be very useful. The other thing, which slowly leads into what we were talking about earlier, Don, is the strange symbolism of dogs in death. In various parts of the world, especially England, strangely enough, it would appear that a large black dog oftentimes makes an appearance on the property or around the house or the home of someone who is getting ready to depart from this life. And I'm not sure what this means, to be real frank about it, but I can tell you personally that this definitely happens. And what I want to do is just briefly relate something that happened to me when I was 4 years old.
Sure.
Go ahead if you have a question, Don.
No, I was just saying, sure, go ahead.
Oh,
be my guest.
Now, we had recently converted from coal to oil. And the coal bin that we had in the basement had been cleaned out, and the partitions taken down, and it made for a very large play area. And I had received a tricycle for Christmas the year before, and I now had a great place to ride it indoors, you know, up and down the cellar and around through the coal bin and what have you. And I spent a lot of hours every day down there doing exactly that. And one day I was in the basement riding the little tricycle around, and I have to tell you that at the far end of the house there was a partition that ran across the cellar, and it had two big windows in it and also a door. And beyond that door was the storage area used by my granddad and my father for all kinds of family artifacts. I didn't go in there very often, but it was a very unique place to visit from time to time. And I was just getting off my bicycle and getting ready to go upstairs for lunch when all of a sudden this door opened by itself. And it was a creaky old door, so it immediately attracted my attention. And standing there was this huge black dog. Now, mind you, this is in a basement of a home in New Jersey, and there was no other entrance or exit from that storeroom. But this dog was standing there and looking at me with very piercing eyes and began to walk toward me. And when it came up to me, it was huge. And mind you, I was 4 years old. It picked up its paw, put it on my chest, and literally knocked me down with it. And I was lying on the ground. For some reason, I was not afraid. And this thing opened its mouth and put its jaws around my throat. And I could literally feel the hot breath on my throat. But it never did anything, never harmed me in any way. And then it just walked back into the room, and I made very quick haste to get out of the basement. Now, the reason why this story is significant is because a few days later, my grandfather passed away right in that house. Now, I don't know what all that means or even if it means anything, but I do know that two things about it are interesting. First of all, it supports the idea that large black dogs are often seen in association with people shedding their mortal coil. And also, it seems to suggest the age-old belief that young children have a particular ability to see spirits, fairies, other types of phenomenon, which adults either lose the ability to comprehend or refuse to see on a conscious level. And there's no question about the fact that this event actually happened. I don't know exactly what it means, as I've already admitted, but I remember it vividly.
Could you describe the breed of dog, Jim?
Well, I can tell you this much. I have discussed this with a lot of people. I have made sketches of this thing. And the only thing that I can really come up with is it's not like any kind of a critter that you would normally encounter as a pet. The jaws are exceptionally long. There's something very peculiar about the ears. I can't remember exactly what it is. And the eyes are huge on this thing. It was jet black, as I recall. And it didn't snarl or growl, so I really couldn't see the teeth. But when it had its mouth on my throat, the thing that was really strange was this very loud hissing sound, almost like it was exhaling while it was keeping its jaws in that position. And I remember it very clearly. I mean, almost too clearly. The only other thing that came to my mind on regarding this event, I don't know if you remember... Geez, the name of the guy just slipped my mind, but there was a fellow who wrote a story, made quite a lot of waves about how his family had been visited by ETs somewhere in upstate New York. And, you know, everybody remembered the event in a way that was different from what really happened.
Uh-huh.
Because their minds... couldn't accept the real fact, and so they conjured up, you know, something that was more plausible to them, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of seeing these grays invading their home, the next day at the breakfast table, they were all talking about these huge owls that were wandering around the living room. And, you know, to me, that's just as weird as talking about grays in your living room. But I guess it's more acceptable to the mind. And so I've often wondered if maybe it wasn't a dog. It's maybe it never has been a dog. Maybe it's something else that people see. But the closest critter that we have on Earth that reminds us of this thing is the dog, and so we make this transition automatically. All I can tell you is it's I've never seen a breed anywhere during the course of my life that looked anything like the thing I remember.
Mm-hmm. Would you like a comment on that?
Oh, sure. Sure, okay. If you want to, go right ahead.
Now, this is going to be my intuition here, and I'm going to try to express it in words that what I'm seeing or what I'm feeling makes sense. And this is not to cast fear out there at all with you nor any of the listeners. Okay, you mentioned two things. You mentioned a dog, and you mentioned an E.T. or E.T.s.
Right.
And people that have seen ETs sometimes see them as whatever, let's say, mind or thought form they project. In other words, they could disguise themselves just by projecting a thought. Let's say a gray. Grays have the ability to project thoughts into the mind of an abductee to cause them to experience something totally different than what's actually happening. In terms of their visual perceptions or their thoughts. They are telepathic, so they can induce a telepathic image in the mind. Now, I'm not saying what you were seeing necessarily was telepathic, but it very well, on the basis of the eyes, it could have been something from dark energy that was lying in wait, so to speak, portending your grandfather's passing, and maybe making an attempt to see if it could interfere with his spiritual essence. That occurs much in demonology, and it occurs much in terms of in the lives of people who are about to do great things, such as you have throughout your career. So, and based upon the things that you told me about what a great man your grandfather was, that would be a prize for someone to be able to capture his essence in some fashion. So you may be very much on target that dog was a spiritual emanation of some sort. It manifested itself using the energies that are there and zeroing in on that. Now you referenced the consciousness of young children. My understanding is that we are all born with the memories of a spiritual place or in a spiritual mission, and we have pretty much an open conduit to the center of the universe in terms of understanding truth. From the moment we are born, from the smack on the rear end, we are now being indoctrinated into this system, this paradigm, or this matrix, if you want to call it that, which is a control matrix. It's our life in this society and on this planet is based upon being controlled. So everything that we are exposed to has some type of control. And remember, even our family members, though they're not intentionally trying to control us, they have been indoctrinated into the same system. So they are, by and large, not in all cases, but by and large, they are already under that system. Your mother may have been very intuitive, or your father may have been very intuitive, but it was something that he could not express openly because it's shunned by a society being controlled under such a system. It's only natural for people to feel that to talk about these things or to acknowledge these things is going to bring ridicule or shame or judgment upon them because it's a judgmental system. It's a system based upon illusions. Now, you may have very well seen something manifest itself very in a very real manner. The fact that it touched you, you could feel it. You could feel the breath. Hopefully, you didn't smell the breath, but you could feel the warmth of the breath as you described it, and you heard a hissing sound. So you had multiple examples of sensitivity and receptivity to that event. And still, the part of you that knows that these things existed is probably what carried you through the whole event. These things can't harm us unless we enter a state of fear. And your protection was that you didn't go into fear. So
strangely enough, I wasn't concerned at all. It was really bizarre. I remember very clearly how I felt. Actually, the first thing that entered my mind was, ooh, a dog. Because I always loved dogs, even when mm-hmm. I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. And then when I realized how big the darn thing was, you know, I was more amazed than scared. So, I mean, the whole thing had a real surrealistic feel to it. But nonetheless, for some reason, I wasn't concerned. Now, you mentioned the fact that all children have this this ability, and more or less it's tuned out of us as we become more enmeshed in the laws of society. And I would tend to agree with you there. I'd like to tell you another personal experience that happened with my children. And this is actually a very powerful thing, because it was shocking when it did occur. My daughter Kelly was about 5, I think, years old. Yeah, probably about 5 or no, she was 5 years old when this occurred. And what it was, there was a friend of the family's who had helped me through college. I had known him since I was a wee lad, and he had been a friend of my dad's and my grandfather's, and I had always been very close to him. And as he pushed on towards 80 years old, he was hospitalized with a number of different complaints, and we were keeping in close touch with him and his family because I had the suspicion that he might not recover, but I had hoped for the best. And I had taken the family to Dutch Wonderland in Pennsylvania for the weekend, and we had just gotten home. I mean, literally, walked in the door when the phone rang. And I picked up the phone, and it turned out that it was this friend of mine's brother. And he said, I'm so sorry to tell you, he said, but Charlie died just a few minutes ago, about 20, 30 minutes ago, and we were trying to reach you to let you know. And, you know, I felt really terrible, and I thanked him for it. And I turned to my wife, and I asked where the kids were. Of course, my youngest was too small to even be concerned about it, but my daughter knew the guy and had met him and gone to the hospital with me a number of times cheer him up, and so I felt that it was only right to tell her what had transpired, even though she was young. And so I was looking for her. She wasn't in her bedroom. Strangely enough, she hadn't even taken her coat off. She was in our bedroom on top of the bed, and when I walked in, she was looking up to the ceiling, and she was waving her hand, and, you know, and she was verbally saying, "Bye-bye, Charlie. Bye-bye." And it just absolutely shocked me because I know she didn't hear anything. I didn't say anything. The message had been delivered by phone to my ear. And, you know, whatever she was experiencing was a legitimate paranormal experience for her. And I took her on my lap and talked to her, and I said, "What exactly did you see, sweetheart?" And she said, "Charlie came to say goodbye." And she was so matter-of-fact, you know, about it, and so honest, and not in the slightest bit concerned, and it just seemed a totally normal thing for her. and that really made an impression on me.
Mm-hmm. And you're describing something which seems very natural, just run-of-the-mill, everyday experience, and yet when we're presented these things through the media, be it on television or in a movie, it's always done to provoke a sense of fear in us more than anything. Never is there really seldom is there really understanding in these issues. We have the movie Ghost where, is it Patrick Swayze, I think, was in that movie with Demi Moore?
Patrick Swayze, Demi Moore.
Yes.
And what's the black gal's name?
Whoopi Goldberg?
Yeah, Whoopi.
Yes, okay. Now, they sort of ridicule the paranormal, the paranormally talented character, Whoopi Goldberg, and they make the relationship of the post-physical Patrick Swayze, I don't remember the characters' names in the movie, but they make Whoopi Goldberg look totally ridiculous in this movie. In other words, psychics are phony, and therefore this she can't really see these things. And they portrayed her as being a phony psychic who was just hoodwinking people for money. And then she has this opportunity to cash this check in the bank, and I remember it was a very large check. And they're playing her to be this unsavory character of sorts. She's already spending the money, and really the money is going to be used to expose how corrupt this other suitor of Demi Moore is and how dishonest he is. That's the essence of the story. But this is prototypical treatment of totally natural phenomenon. Now, it's because it doesn't happen to everyone on a conscious level, or because of there is all of this mystique and this misperception about what it really is, even though they don't like to even acknowledge it, and they ridicule us. They ridicule us psychics or those of us who know and understand metaphysics and can teach it, to the point where they think that that's going to discredit us, and they're at the same time they're studying this. They're putting millions and billions of dollars into studying it secretly and using it mm-hmm. for the spy networks, using it for science, using it for even intergalactic information if they can somehow get an edge and turn what they learn into a weapon. You know this.
Sure.
How they respond to it, how they use it, has everything to do with the dark side. There's nothing light-oriented about how it's misused. And, in fact, they're violating universal law in that process. So what you're describing about your daughter is a very natural process, and it's very matter-of-fact. I know, and I've had those same types of experiences recently. Just a few days ago, I got a phone call from one of my listeners in Washington who exchanges information with me from time to time and follows a lot of the topics and has been very interested in these topics. And her dog passed away. The dog was about 17 years old, so you can consider there's a very, very strong attachment. And she was very upset and despondent about it, but in a good way. She was mourning, just like you would a child or another family member. And I think she had remarked that her son was very close to the dog as well. And so the whole family was taking it hard, and I began to talk to them just to try to let them know that even though the dog moved on, she was still going to be around them, and at that point, the dog started talking to me. Now, this may sound crazy to someone who doesn't understand this, but it's very real. When you know this and when you can communicate on this level, and you know, we go on after we die. We're what we're told about this is the first time and the only time is not true. And our essence and our memory and every stays with us, and we move on, we move forward, or we move upward to a higher vibration. In fact, we're doing that now. Even while we're talking about this, we're doing that very thing. And I began telling her what the dog was telling me. And now I wasn't hearing the dog speak, but I was hearing the dog's thoughts. The dog was affecting my thoughts, and I was communicating and describing things that the dog did. And this was confirmed. So it's a very real phenomenon. Now, was that a spooky thing? This was something we talked about in the middle of the afternoon. I said, I just have this message to share with you, and I know that you will share with the rest of your family, and everyone will understand exactly who this message came from. And I just shared the message. And they all acknowledged it. And they received instant healing from that morning. And part of what I said was that your dog does not want you to mourn her. She wants you to recall all the things that she did as a puppy, growing up, all the times she came to the rescue, and all the times that you helped her make it through her life. It's a mutual type of sharing. This dog didn't just come here by chance. This is written in the stars, you could say. And these experiences, I don't mean to take up all the airtime here. I'm just getting this point out. These experiences are very, very real. Now,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the first one was just as real, but it was most likely affected by a different type of energy that had a different agenda.
Sure. Well, it's funny you should bring up the thing about the dogs, because my wife's dog died week and a half ago, and both my wife and my son can still hear it barking. And it barks under the same circumstances that it did for years. Like if it needs to go out at 2 o'clock in the morning, it used to wake up my wife, and she'd have to go and let the dog out to relieve himself quickly. And the other thing that used to always happen was my son would get a lift home from some party or something and stand in the driveway talking to his buddies, and the dog would go nuts in the kitchen because he wanted to come out. And my son still does that, and the dog is long dead, and you can still hear him barking in the kitchen. And the other thing is, and my wife has told me on several occasions, she's heard him whining to go out, and he is out. But the energy is still there, which is phenomenal.
Have you suggested that they try to record it, say with just a little handheld cassette recorder, something like that?
Well, don't forget, they live in New Jersey, and I'm out here, so I don't really get involved that much with what they do. But the interesting thing is, my son's friends who drove him home, there were four or five guys in the car, all heard the dog barking. So it wasn't like it was just my boy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty phenomenal in its own right.
Yeah,
Go ahead. I was going to say, that reminds me of an even more interesting story, which would be worth relating. I had a very dear friend for many years, about 30 years we were close, this guy and myself. His name was Ken, and he was an extremely talented person, could do almost anything he applied himself to, but his favorite pastime was woodworking. And he used to make gorgeous cabinets and jewelry boxes and things of that nature. And he had a very large set of hands. I mean, if you saw his hands, they were unmistakable. They were very large, very powerful, very calloused. And, you could say his hands were his hallmark. And unfortunately, he died of kidney failure about 3-4 years ago. And I was living in Las Vegas at the time, and his sister called me and told me that he had passed away, and I couldn't get back for the funeral. I was really upset. It was just one of those circumstances where I couldn't get away from what I was doing. And that night, I had a dream, and the only thing in the dream was his hands. And I knew exactly who it was, and I knew that I wasn't just having some sort of a memory or something of his hands, because there was feeling about it. There was intent with the imagery. But that's not where it ends. What's really interesting is the next day, his ex-wife, they had been divorced, called me, she had only heard the same day I did about his passing. And she told me that she had had this dream about his hands. And she told me the movements and the gestures, and they were exactly the same as what I saw. And I think that that's, you know, it may not mean anything to anyone else, but to myself and his wife, it was a very powerful experience. And that's not the end of it either. When I was in Las Vegas, I met a young Indian girl, and we became pretty close, and she told me quite bluntly that her guardian was her deceased grandfather. And I didn't really know whether to believe it or what, you know, because I wasn't sure just what to make of it. She just talked about it so freely that, you know, I said, it just became a matter of chat. Mm-hmm. But she came with me to visit some friends of mine in Santa Fe, New Mexico, because she was interested in Indian jewelry. And these were folks I've known for many years. And they invited us to go there for dinner. So we went to their home after spending an afternoon in downtown Santa Fe. And I noticed that this gal was extremely uncomfortable. I could just tell by the way she was behaving that something was bothering her. So I took her on the side and I asked her, I said, what seems to be wrong? And she said, well, there are spirits in this house. And she said, there's a little boy wandering around in here. And she said, also, there's an old man who killed himself in that bedroom right there. And I was discussing this with her, and our hostess overheard part of the conversation, and she homed in on us and said, are you discussing ghosts? And sheepishly, we kind of said yes. And she said, well, that's very interesting, because she said, there's a little boy that used to live here who drowned in the tub or something, and we see him walking through the house all the time. And she pointed to the same bedroom and said, and also there was an older gentleman who hanged himself in that bedroom. So that was a pretty amazing thing. But the coup de grace didn't come until our trip back to Las Vegas together. And we were driving back on 40, and it was in the evening. Actually, it was in the night. And I was, this whole scenario was running through my head, and I said to her, you know, it's amazing that you have this gift to be able to see and appreciate the presence of spirits. And kind of half jokingly, I said to her, is your grandfather still with you? And she turned and looked in the back seat of the car, and she goes, yes, he's riding in the back of the car right now. And I remember the thought in my mind at the time, and I'm saying, God, I wish I knew if it was really so or not, you know. And The thought no sooner crystallized in my mind than she said, oh, by the way, he's got a friend with him. And I said, really? And she said, yes, and this guy knows you. And I said, does he really? And she says, yes, his name is Ken. Well, I almost drove off the road. because there was no way that she could know that. And I hadn't even mentioned to her that this guy had passed away. There was no point in it. So, you know, it was a really, really powerful experience. I don't mind telling you.
Yeah. Well, we we're brought up in this culture that that if we see any spiritual essence after someone passes, it's a ghost. Now, a ghost would be an entity that's basically decided for one reason or another that it's not willing to move on in to a higher state of consciousness. So, in essence, it has made the decision to remain trapped in a 3D environment, and this is why hauntings take place. What we call hauntings may not be as dark as they're made out to be. Again, the powers that be would try to reinforce the fear factor and have us focus on what these things might do to us, but they have no power over us that we don't give them. That's the main point.
Yeah.
That I would make.
Now, well, I agree with that.
Yeah, there is a case, and you may be interested in this too, because it involves spiritual sightings in a mental institution in let's say Southeast Texas, in the Aurora, Texas area. And Jim Mars actually wrote about this, and I've heard him speak about this. So, you know, the credit for this story goes to him. I actually emailed him my take on what this was. Evidently, at this hospital, there had been these short beings which were seen by patients there. And the nurses, which I understand were of a certain religious persuasion, working in the hospital, would hear the patients talk about this, and Jim had begun his investigation of the Aurora crash of 1899. These manifestations were going on since that time, and I instantly discerned that it was actually ET entities, let's say, like grays, not necessarily so much as a spirit entity, so much as they were in some in reality where they had the ability to move through the walls and move from room to room, and this is what everyone was describing seeing. These short little beings with huge eyes and sort of silvery looking because they were manifesting themselves as light. But I didn't sense that they were spiritual beings. They may have had some spiritual essence, but they were not of the order of that which a human is. And when I talked to Jim about it, he acknowledged that he was coming to that conclusion himself, that it wasn't actually even spirits necessarily they were seeing, but they were the grays moving in and out of that hospital. There was something that interested them. And so they were showing themselves in that form. Now, that's very similar to what you described about the dog. It has to stretch one's imagination to picture this, but we're not talking about this from a fear vantage point either. You know, we're talking about the fact that these things go on. You've heard the term ectoplasm, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely, sure.
You know, and it's a form of energy that takes on the characteristics of what it was in a living, breathing body, usually. But it can manifest itself from a variety of sources. There's not just one type. And all of these are also interdimensional phenomena too. It's not just something that's in the three dimensions that we understand. It transcends the dimensions that actually permeate each other. And you could probably explain that in physics.
Well, not only that, but the thing that's interesting too, Don, is that there are people who know a lot about this stuff, like shamans, like some of the monks who in Tibet who spend their whole life meditating and investigating this stuff. And to be honest with you, one of the things that has disappointed me the most in life is the fact that I have never encountered a religion, especially in the West, where there is any real knowledge of the deity or the spiritual world or, you know, the true meaning of what all this reality is about. We have all kinds of dogma. That's based on all kinds of, I was thinking. Yeah, and it's all based on, you know, whatever it's based on. But the fact of the matter is that nothing truly prepares us for what comes after we take our last breath. And I think that in itself is one of the biggest problems that affects the way the average individual commands his life. Because if we had knowledge of what comes after death, and not just theory or dogma or, you know, wild flying advice, but, you know, true knowledge of the spiritual side of things, we would live our lives much differently, without any doubt. And to me, it's always been, I've always considered that a real shame that we don't have that. Now, I did know a woman who was a medium in New Jersey, and she was exceptionally good. After my dad died, I went to see her, and some of the things she told me about my dad, there was just no way anybody could know. It was really an amazing thing. But I tested her all the time on various things and tried to, not that I was doubting her, I wanted to find out what was going on without her knowing that I was trying to find out more, because mm-hmm. I didn't want to upset her, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
But I had the opportunity to do an experiment, and I did it, and it was truly amazing. You remember me talking about Otis Carr quite frequently
mm-hmm.
on other shows and what have you. And, of course, Otis was trying to decipher some of the things in this blue notebook that he got from Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the devices had a code name called Hummingbird. And I went to this woman on one occasion and asked her to please try to contact Otis T. Carr. And she went into her estate, and within a few minutes she said, yes, I have the entity that you're referring to. What is it that you want to know? And I said, please ask him about the hummingbird. And so she went back into her trance or whatever you want to call it, and I could see by the looks on her face that she was thoroughly confused. And finally she came out of it and she said to me, I just don't understand any of this. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, I asked him about the hummingbird, just as you suggested, but he keeps showing me images of machinery and gears and wheels and all kinds of things that have nothing to do with a hummingbird. And you see, there was no way that she could have known what the hummingbird really was.
Yes.
And I took that as a very, very powerful endorsement of her abilities.
Yeah, that was in her mind. She was picturing the creature, and yet she didn't realize that that was just a code name.
Yeah, and I thought that was pretty amazing.
Yes. So, did you figure out how the hummingbird worked?
Well, actually, that's part of my ongoing investigations into all that stuff, which we have talked about on many occasions, and
mm-hmm.
frankly, to answer your question, I think I do know what it's supposed to be. It's a relativistic power source, and we've talked about that on some of your other shows.
Yes,
but it's not
yes.
something simple. It's a very complicated device. So we can get into it again sometime.
It rings with me, you know, or it resonates with me. as if I understand some things about it. And I know that we've talked about it. I'm recalling some things about it. Somewhere I know more. But, well, this is interesting. Now, we threw this topic out there, and we threw out the invitation several times to have people call, and no one called. So they're either finding it very interesting, or we've scared them out of their wits.
Well, there's a third possibility. Maybe the transmitter doesn't work.
Or no, there's a fourth possibility. Maybe they're not even listening.
Well, that's what I mean, yeah. Same difference. Well, let me close. I know we don't have a lot of time left. Let me close with a very interesting little anecdote. As you know, I have been an admirer of Tesla's for many years, and when I read how he had been mistreated by Edison years and years ago, my opinion of Edison lowered completely, and I used to talk about him in a very negative fashion. And so I was to a psychic with a girlfriend of mine back in New Jersey, and she was having the reading. I wasn't.
Uh-huh.
And the interesting thing is the woman turned to me and said, "By the way, I have a message for you." And I said, "Oh, that's good. What is it?" And she said, "Thomas Edison requests that you please forgive him and let him alone." Because you're always downgrading him, and it really affects him. He's sorry for what he did to Tesla. And that really floored me, I have to tell you.
Wow. Well, you know, I kind of have the same feeling. I mean, he had some great inventions, but then you wonder which ones were really his.
Yeah, of course, because he had a whole bunch of people working for him, and no matter who invented what, he got the credit.
Yes, and he's from my home state on top of it. In fact, he's not that far, you know. His birthplace is not that far from mine. So, you know, I can be there in 20 or 30 minutes by car, you know, depending on traffic and that. So,
well, we mustn't forget that when he was a younger man, the things that he invented were truly his own. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he invented, like, the ticker tape or whatever it was, and modifications to the telegraph. And I'm not sure if the phonograph falls into that category or not, but I think it does.
Mm-hmm.
And then after he became wealthy and started hiring engineers, it was impossible to tell who invented what, you know.
Yeah. And I presume he took some of Bell's inventions, like the telephone, and made some modifications to how it worked, you know, which he should be credited for, if that's the case. I don't know that specifically. But like you, I share that it's not so much an animosity, it's just a disappointment, I guess, that someone so prolific could be so victimized,
right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, to me, it's actually, it's a form of resentment.
Mm-hmm.
I always have felt resentment about it, even though it didn't happen to me personally. It almost feels like it did, you know, because I've had people steal my ideas, and I know how that feels. And so I guess I look at it in a very personal way. But,
yes. Well, you know, when you know, in looking at Tesla's inventions, and I've looked at many of the patents myself, and you know how much I researched into his life and the financial end, and I saw so many many examples of how he was being mistreated, and you would think someone would just flat out respect someone with those gifts that he had and respect what he brought to mankind, but they had other plans for all of us, and so I resent what was done to him on a very grand scale, and I still hold that resentment because we're still witnessing the effects and the impact of those deeds.
Absolutely.
you know, and you reach a level of consciousness where you begin to understand how great that man was, and if he learned everything from someone else, you know, the fact that he could manifest all those inventions and make things work the first time around, or if he had a problem, you know, he didn't give up until he came up with a solution, and if he felt that it was going to be misused, he had a way of couching that in how he presented it, in terms of paperwork or the whole concept.
Exposure, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he was a very moral guy, which is, unfortunately, it's a fleeting attribute in this world.
And believe it or not, much of what he did and the methods he used are immersed in what they call the paranormal, but more accurately, it was metaphysics. It was
absolutely
the hidden sciences.
Well, the thing about it that's so fascinating, and I've experienced this myself. As a matter of fact, we've talked about it. Is that when you plug into the universe and you extract information, and it's definitely genuine and novel because you can immediately go and use it. That's actually, you're actually making use of some of the foundations that alchemists use and all sorts of creative people use. You know, the only difference without what the alchemy thing is that I think the universe is much more selective about who it bestows that kind of information upon, because even though most people are attracted to alchemy because they think it's a shortcut to wealth, the real secrets of alchemy expose the man's relationship to the divine and to the spiritual world. And therefore, it's a highly guarded avenue of knowledge.
Well, and, yeah. When you say the spiritual word too, or world, you're speaking about our true essence, and so the truth
exactly.
And
yes,
that
because
is,
the real nature of alchemy is the controlled evolution of the spiritual essence of man. It's a method by which he can lift himself by his own bootstraps, as it were, to from the level of the animal to the level of something far beyond human nature.
Yes. Well, we are out of time, Jim. This has been interesting, and you know, we should return to these topics again. We went from a very strange black dog to Nikola Tesla. It was interesting. I thank you for sharing those stories and being so open about it, because those are very real occurrences. Unfortunately, ignorance and the practice of turning this type of information into ridicule and really unwarranted ridicule, because these people that do the ridiculing of such information, A, are either hiding what they know about it, or B, they're very concerned that someone knows something that they can't explain. And you yourself know that from your experience in science. So I'm sure the listeners enjoyed it, though. And, you know, again, we'll just keep asking them to call in until they do.
Yeah, I can't understand really why there wouldn't be at least one call, you know, once in a while. You ought to have your phone lines checked, you know. Maybe they've been cut.
Yes. Well, if you talk to Don Newsom and Seth about that, probably have some stories to tell. There's been a lot of hanky-panky with the phone lines, but it's Friday night, and maybe everybody's just kicking back, enjoying the show, and we'll hear on another show. They do call in, though. They have called in, and we've had some very nice calls, too. So we want to encourage everyone next week to call in when Jim Murray's on. We'll have another interesting topic. Jim, it's time to say goodnight. And
Don. Thank you. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to doing it again.
Okay, you have yourself a great weekend. And the listeners out there, please tune in. Sunday, I'll be doing my last guest hosting with Dr. Len Horowitz for Mission Possible radio show, which airs 9 p.m. Pacific time. And that's my last guest host appearance in the near future. We want to wish Reverend Roxy the best. She may be on the show. We're not certain yet, but she sends her greetings to all her listeners. And we have a few interesting topics we're going to cover that concerns everyone in the country. And next week, I've got another great lineup of guests, so you want to be sure to tune in. Visit my website, directlightproductions.com, to view the schedule or any articles and pictures and information that's coming out. In the meantime, I want to wish everyone a very peaceful, joyous, and light-filled night, and have a good night.
Welcoming the day with group meditation and yoga, preparing spiritually, mentally, and physically in order to help their neighbors with whatever struggles they may have for the day, where you don't have the fear of where your next meal is going to come from or how you're going to pay your rent or utility bills. My name is Michael, and I'm the very proud owner of the website lawofonecommunity.com. This is a new community project in which the inhabitants will be naturally focused on a spiritual understanding of self, as well as having a true understanding that we are our brother's keeper. I believe there's an awakening happening in the world today, that each of us is waking up to the fact that, as a society, we are living